This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Hour number two of One Bills Live, broadcasting from the Seneca Studios in Orchard Park, New York. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And joining us on the line right now, the ESPN NFL College and pro football, NFL and college football analyst. He's also on NFL Live for ESPN. And, oh, by the way, he was a former quarterback who played 12 seasons in the NFL. It's one Dan Orlovsky joining us from Connecticut. Dan, how you doing, man? Good to see you.
Good to see you guys. I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm very happy that we have real football games to talk about, and right. That makes me to be in a pretty good place. So I'm excited to be with you guys.
Yes. Yep. Now, I have to say that a lot of us follow your little immediate turnaround breakdowns on Twitter, where you're basically, you know, backing up your television video and shooting it with your phone. I'm gonna rib you a little bit here because you went from a pencil to a spoon this week. What prompted you to go to the spoon? Were you just eating at the time, Dan? What the hell was going on there? Having some ice cream?
No time to waste, man. No time to waste. Like, when my brain feels like it sees something, I can't. I'm in the middle, and it's just time to work. So something was there, and I said, this could be used as my tool right now.
Yeah. Well, he went fat end of the spoon, right. And then he thought better of it because it was covering up like three players. He went back to the narrow end of the spoon. He's pointing around.
Shows you my maturity level.
There you go. Well, we've been talking about week one, and we said just before we came on the air 3 months ago, none of us thought we would be here. But I think surprisingly, I think week one of the NFL went off without a hitch. I mean, we haven't even heard about any outbreaks of the virus. No, you know, nobody on COVID IR yet this week after the road trips that all the visiting teams had to go through. Your thoughts about the likelihood that this season will go off as smoothly as week one?
Yeah, I'm certainly hopeful. And obviously getting to the point where we are today is amazing. It's a credit to the NFL as a whole, to the individual organizations, to their doctors and their coaches and the players, just for their responsibility, for the kind of the challenge that they've accepted in regards to that. I'm confident. I've been confident. I think that most there's a lot of guys in the NFL that, one, are responsible, mature adults, like, and they can see the big picture and they understand, if I want to make my $500,000, $3 million, $6-7 million this year, I need to play football and I need to make sure that my teammates are playing football as well. And so I think there's going to be just a great amount of accountability in locker rooms in regards to that, and to oneself and to one's teammates and family. So it's a great start and certainly hopeful it keeps going.
I know, Dan, that you often keep your eyes on young up-and-coming quarterbacks, the 2018 class notwithstanding, and Josh is obviously in that group. And Steve and I have been talking about this the last couple of days, because as we've watched Josh and every minute of his play over the last couple of years, I think we came to the conclusion that Josh was probably never going to be in that Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers category of 68-70% completion. But because of what he does with his legs, if he was a 62-64 completion passer and gave you what he gave you with his legs, including the rushing touchdowns, you could win with that. But last week, they go short to intermediate passing almost exclusively. Their longest play is 29 yards, and he completes almost 72% of his passes. Talk about the level of efficiency that Brian Daboll has created for Josh Allen in this passing game.
Yeah, it's been really awesome to watch. You know, I would say it really started mid-season last year and kind of carried its way through the year, and them really getting a feel of what Josh is as a quarterback and who Josh is as a quarterback. I think kind of the way I've started to realize quarterback player, the way I try to educate or communicate it to people is some guys are thinkers and some guys are reactors. You can win with both and you can be great with both. And Josh has kind of started to show himself as one of those reacting type of quarterbacks. That's not a knock on intellect. It's just what his strength is. It's playing reactionary football. And so Daboll is really done a good job. And I think Ken Dorsey as well is going, okay, I've got this quarterback and he struggles with this stuff, right? So why am I going to continue to ask him to do those things? And while you can do that or while you can see that about a player, he's going, man, he's really good at this stuff. He's really gotten good at throwing crossing routes. He's really understanding to put some touch on a football. He's really a big-time athlete. So can we create some space for him in the run game? And I said this yesterday on TV, it's very similar to what Greg Roman has done with Lamar Jackson. Like, hey, man, this kid's really good at this stuff. We won't ask him to throw outside the numbers a ton. It's not what he does well. So maybe not ask Josh to push the football down the field so much. Although he has the big arm, it's just not what he does well. And so watching week one, I know it's week one. I'm not overreacting. I'm just being passionate. I'm just like, I just think it's really cool to see. And so Daboll deserves a ton of credit. Josh deserves a ton of credit. And I think the organization deserves a ton of credit for kind of surrounding him with the people they have.
Do you think more teams need to be more patient with young quarterbacks? Because it seems obvious the way the Bills put it together around Josh Allen. They got him. They didn't want to play him, but he was forced in his rookie season. He kind of struggled with a bad offensive line. Then the first thing they did when they got some money in an offseason was to buy him an offensive line, which really helped him. You see what Cleveland has done. You see what the Jets have done with Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. Why does that seem so difficult for another team to do what the Bills have done on a methodical basis, just staying inside the lines?
Yeah, I think there's an honest point to be made as well, is if you look at some of the younger quarterbacks that we think are starting to become good players and not only having like individual success but team success, to my knowledge, most of them are the kids that were traded up for by good football teams, right? Like Houston traded up for Deshaun, Kansas City traded up for Patrick. Baltimore traded up for Lamar. I believe you guys traded up for Josh,
yes.
Right? And so you guys were like good football teams that weren't drafting in the first three or four picks. I think you guys went to the playoffs the year before with Tyrod, the same with Alex Smith in Kansas City. So like there was a much healthier football team, maybe not like top five, six, seven rosters in the NFL, but wasn't bottom three or four either. And so a healthier kind of just foundational point for some of the young quarterbacks. And the guys like Baker, Sam Darnold, you know, those guys were drafted by disasters and they've only kind of maintained being disasters. And so, you know, without taking things away from those players, because they're doing a great job of development, they are benefiting from the fact that they went to an organization that, you know, kind of had a higher foundation than some of the other kids.
And then just with respect to Josh and what he does well, we've seen him have a good deal of success off play action. And we look at the percentages from last week, and almost 25% of their plays came off play action, Dan. And that seems to be a sizable number. You would know better than we would, but they ranked 24th. In play action last year. It looks like that's going, at least at first blush, I know it's only one game, that it's going to be a bigger part of what they do, because Josh last week off play action, 12 of 18 for 165 yards and a touchdown with a 114 passer rating.
Yeah, I would say two things in regards to this, like with football, actually three things right now when it comes to football and offensive coordinators in the NFL. If you aren't utilizing play action, no matter who your quarterback is, if you're not using pre-snap motion, no matter who your quarterback is, no, if you're not utilizing space, no matter who your quarterback is, you're doing a disservice to your football team and your quarterback. This is why play action matters, especially if you got some people to use it. I'll go a little nerdy here with you guys. First of all, defensive players, most of the defensive players start playing football defensively at the age of 9 or 10 years old. And the only thing they hear from that age is, we got to stop the run. 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 That's all they hear. It's ingrained in them. So you don't even need to be a really good running football team to understand that if you present the football to a tailback, defenders are going to go that way. They are trained to go to the football. And so that is going to create hesitation on a defensive line, hesitation at the second level, and hesitation at the secondary level. The second thing is this. If you've got people, I want everyone to think of like a carnival, right? And you know the big giant hammer game where you slam it down and the light goes up?
Yeah.
Think of the light as like the top of a defense, the secondary. The more speed you have in the play action game, the higher that light goes, right? And then think of the second level, the linebackers, as the hammer. And the play action gets those guys to get down closer towards the line of scrimmage. Now imagine how big that light is, like how big of a gap that is. You're stretching out the defense. You are creating gaps in the defense when you go with play action pass. Those are easier throws for quarterbacks. And so that's why I think it's such a big deal to continue to utilize it. The same with pre-snap motion, force defenses to communicate. Force these defenses to play on the fly. You change run fits. You help guys get off press. And then the more space you can create with guys, then attack it, it's better. And I think Dable's doing a really good job with all three of those things.
Well, we had an opening game that Josh Allen has not shown. He threw for over 300 yards, completed, like Brownie said, over 70% of his passes. But they were playing the Jets. How much of it was how much did you see that said, yeah, this guy is better, and how much can we attribute to the fact that Jets struggled?
Yeah, this to me is so much more about Josh and the Buffalo Bills. You know, I remember last year Lamar lit up the Miami Dolphins in week one, and everybody said, yeah, but it's the Dolphins. Rumor has it Lamar had a good season last year. So this is so much more about Josh and the Bills. I'd say two things for me that kind of stood out was – or three things. The way that Josh has really learned to use his eyes. You guys know that was one of the things that I was very wary and critical of with Josh coming out of school, was he really lacked eye discipline. When you play zone defense around him or against him right now, he's really got a good feel for using his eyes as a weapon, moving defenders, trying to create bigger windows for the passing game. The second thing is some of the touch throws. He had an out route to John Brown off a little flash fake play action to the right sideline that he had to get up over a safety, but firm enough before the corner gets there. Outstanding throw. The crossing route to Stephon Diggs that comes out of the sky and just lands so softly on his feet is outstanding. And those are those touch throws that I don't know if we've seen from Josh a lot. Certainly did not see it a lot in college. And that's growth and development. There's no other way for me to kind of spin it. That's growth and development. And so that's why, for me, it's so much more about Josh. And then I love the way they're using it in the run game. I mean, they are doing Baltimore stuff where it's zone read, and they're bringing people from one side of the formation to the other in the zone read game. And the only thing I would say with Josh is, you know, when you're a runner, that's the thing you got to prove to your coaching staff right now, in my opinion. When you're a runner, that ball is your franchise. And you got to know when the risk is worth it and when it's not. Because putting the ball on the ground twice, you're only going to get so many lucky bounces.
Right. Last one I have for you on Josh is, and we're talking to Dan Orlovsky, NFL analyst for ESPN, also on NFL Live. And the one I have for you is, how much of what Buffalo can now deploy at the receiver position across the board puts opposing defenses in a tough spot if they want to spy Josh? Can you just kind of run us through the different things that are at play there that can compromise a coordinator's ability to just say, hey, we got to spy Josh here, but hold up a second. We got Brown and Diggs on the outside and Beasley here. Just walk us through that, if you could, from a X's and O's perspective.
Yeah, so first of all, I'll start with Brown. The reason why he is an asset is the speed, right? And defensive coordinators always have to ask, all right, they've got speed on the perimeter. Do we feel good just going one-on-one with the potential big play down the field? Or, you know, just a catch and run? Because that's when you determine, can you give safety help or not? I think he had that second and 14 check against pressure where it was a little slip screen to John, and creates a big play, right? So that's the question you have to ask with John Brown first. Is like, are you weary that his speed can create a big play, even turning short passes into big games? Then Stephon Diggs. The biggest question with Stephon is, I think he's one of the better man-to-man route runners in the NFL. Do you think that you have a person that confidently can match up with him just one-on-one when it comes to routes? Because I would say that most teams do not. I think there's some great corners in the NFL. One of them resides in Buffalo, but I don't know how many guys you feel great just going one-on-one matchup-wise with. And if you say no, well, then you go, we can help in coverage. We can play robber or we can play thief. Well, you only get 11, right? And so that robber or thief guy is either going to rob the receiver or he's going to spy the quarterback. And then with Beasley, it's the same thought process on the inside. Do we feel that we could play, not only like when you play zone coverage, do you have someone that can kind of make sure that he can match up in zone coverage with them and not create too much space, and then man on the inside? And then you're always thinking as a defensive coordinator, okay, if the answer is no, we've got to put numbers rather than people that way. Well, those numbers can only go two places, to the receivers or to the quarterback. And so if you decide to do both, then you only have a three-man rush. And that's where, you know, offensive line will play better and Josh will hopefully be patient with the football. I've said, and Dawson Knox too, I said this, I think, maybe back into May, that I would have put Buffalo in like the top 7 or 8 when it came to like full skill position support to the quarterback. I think they got 4 really good players. And if you look at the NFL the last, 3 or 4 years, the teams that go deep in the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, they don't have one superstar. They got 4, 5, 6 really, really good players. And I think Buffalo's kind of becoming that.
What do you think this offense will look like when it plays its best? They spend a lot of time in 11 personnel. They didn't get much going in the run game. Certainly that may change because
a lot of 10 personnel,
yeah,
too.
A lot of 10 personnel. Yeah. And what do you see as a trend in the NFL that the Bills may follow or set? I mean, what do you think the identity of this offense is going to be? And Brian Daboll, with the quarterback the Bills have in Josh Allen, what do you think this offense would look like when it is at its best?
Yeah, when the offense is going to – or what it'll look like when it's at its best is 11 on 11. It won't be 11 on 10. There's been great offenses in the NFL that have been 11 on 10, and the quarterback is not kind of a weapon. He's not used. He's not deployed to make it 11 on 11. Josh is one of those players that you can utilize in that aspect. And so you're imagining there's 53 and a third yards on every single play, sideline to sideline. And I think Daboll will continue to stretch people out horizontally, knowing that he can play 11-on-11 football, and that's just going to force defenses into decision-making. And I think, really good offenses right now in the NFL are deciding to attack people rather than schemes, and they're forcing you to get your personnel right before you get your play call right. And that's really difficult when you got good skill players and a quarterback that you can use 8 plays a game as a runner. And so I think the Chiefs have really started to become a team that I've looked at and said, they're not an 11 personnel. They're just in Big Ten. You know, Kelsey's not playing tight end. He's playing flexed out wide receiver. I expect to see that a little bit out of Buffalo. Even their 11 will start to look like 10 because it's just Big Ten. Knox will be playing a receiver type of, they might put his hand in the dirt. He ain't playing tight end. They're going to utilize him in the pass game and continue to stretch teams, creating that space. And, I think it could be a very, very dangerous offense this season.
Very quickly, Dan, because I know we have to let you go. 2 of the best cornerbacks in the league are going to be on the same field next week when the Bills play the Rams, and 2 of the highest paid cornerbacks in the league, in Tre'Davious White and Jalen Ramsey. What makes those two elite? I guess what goes into making a corner elite? Because they have 2 very different styles. Ramsey's a chance taker, and Tre'Davious is, by the letter, a technician.
Yeah, I'd say that Jalen, I mean, he's just so physical and long. His confidence is obviously a big deal, but physical and long. Like, he wants to beat you up. Imagine, you know, kind of thinking Ty Law for the AFC East people. Like, Ty Law used to just bury you at the line of scrimmage. And then Tre'Davious, I think he's a more technically sound Asante Samuel. Like, I would be scared to death to throw the ball his way when he's playing off coverage, because he plays back corner like a point guard almost. Like, his vision, his ability to play with vision to the quarterback and just kind of have great feel for the football, it's very Asante Samuel-like to me. And so, premier corner, I would probably call him the best dollar-for-dollar corner in the NFL, even though he got paid. I think he's the best dollar-for-dollar corner in the NFL.
Dan, thanks for the insight and the time. As always, we know we have to let you go, so we appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you down the line here. Good luck on NFL Live going forward.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Dan, thanks.
Dan Orlovsky from ESPN. I just love the way he breaks stuff down, but, man, I had to give him a little crap for that. I'll be scrolling around on Twitter, and yeah. I was watching the Monday night game, the early Monday night game.
Holds a spoon. He holds the business.
Well, he's watching the game just like I am, and then something strikes him that he sees on tape or that he sees in the game. He backs up his television on his DVR, and then he cues it up. And I don't know if he's eating ice cream or whatever during the game. He usually uses a pen because, you know, you use the point of the pen because the people are small on that screen. He's using a spoon. And he uses the fat end of the spoon, and he realizes he's covering up half the offensive line. So he flips the spoon around, and he uses the point. Oh, man, I had to rip him for that a little bit. It was funny. But I love those breakdowns that he has on Twitter. It's just a two-minute snippet of something that he sees with his trained quarterback eye that I'm never going to see. I love that.
And it's easy, too. He's got a lot of expertise. He played quarterback for a long time. He's the guy, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy, the quarterback that was playing for the Detroit Lions.
He's a backup for a long time.
Right. And he took the snap in his own end zone and ran out the back of the end zone, didn't know he was out the back of the end zone. That's Dan Orlovsky.
Yeah.
But his experience and his depth of knowledge is obvious. When he retired from the NFL, he was trying to find something to do and stuff, and he was just noticing some things on games. So he started to tweet out his analysis of what he saw. And he's obviously, we have him on our show. He's great. He puts it into layman's terms. He has a great, the thing about the carnival game where you hit the hammer and ring the bell. It's a great analogy of creating space as an offense. His ability to communicate that to the regular fan, and starting from his own house and his own Twitter account, now he's working for ESPN as an analyst because of his depth of knowledge. Of course, he didn't just decide to do it. I mean, the guy played for 13 years in the league. So, but just doing that kind of small, quick hit of an analysis really opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people to understand the game better.
And he can't say enough about, again, and we've talked about this a lot, but player development. I think when Josh came into the league, the widely held opinion was, due to lack of time in the college game, that Josh had the biggest learning curve to travel among those five quarterbacks that got drafted with him in round one. He did not get a lot of starts. I think he played in 21 college games, you know, at Wyoming, played some junior college, and I think he had like 20-something starts or something over those 2 years. So, I mean, a limited amount of time to improve as a quarterback. And so I think that's why you saw the learning curve where it was in year one and year two. But the job that Brian Daboll has done with him and Josh's commitment to being great. I mean, he said playing football at the NFL level is all I've ever wanted to do. He's proven that with the level of commitment he's made to making himself a better quarterback. Now, will this week be as easy as last week? I don't think so. In terms of the passing game, the corners that the Dolphins can put on the field are damn good. So it will be a little bit more of a challenge. But if they can get the running game going and force Miami to respect that, then you set up play action, and then you set up matchups that could work in your favor. And maybe your best option this week is Dawson Knox in the passing game.
The point is this. This team is built to be able to win in one week where the defensive line of the other team can stop the run. And they're also built to win if they come out with two good corners. This team's also should be built to win if the defense can pressure a passer. And this is a team that should be able to win when it's something else. This team is built to be able to win in a multitude of ways because of their talent level and their depth. And it will be interesting to see, and that's how we got to our Twitter poll today, what kind of matchup do you think is going to be important, or at least you're willing to, you know, you want to see? And I think the fact we can't figure it out, or we have all these theories about what Brian Daboll is going to do, he can do a lot of things,
right?
Because he's got some things to, he's got some weapons and some talent on his offensive side of the ball. And that also goes for Leslie Frazier on the defensive side.
So your choices on the Twitter poll today in terms of what matchup you're most looking forward to against the Dolphins: A, the Bills pass game against the Dolphins secondary; Ryan Fitzpatrick against the Bills defense; Deion Dawkins versus Shaq Lawson, which is a matchup of old friends; or something else. I'm going to tell you, Steve, I voted for something else. I want to see this run game get some traction this week against this Dolphins defense. They gave up 214 yards on the ground last week. I don't know that they'll give up that much this week, because that's probably job number one for them in practice all throughout the week, that you know Brian Flores is going to be grinding them on. So, but I do want to see more production than we saw this past week, because they got to win the battle at the line of scrimmage, plain and simple. And if that becomes another tough task for them, we could be running into something here.
Because, it would be.
Because the following week,
right,
you're going against Aaron Donald and company. If you can't do it against the Dolphins defense that gave up 200 rushing yards, then there might be some other issues bubbling up
to
the surface.
It would be comforting to have Devin Singletary and Zach Moss rush for combined 150 yards or 100 or more.
Right.
It would be nice to see them put up a big, heavy day, get a good workload, have the team be in control of the game and just wear them out up front. It would be comforting, I think, as Bills fans, to know, okay, at least we can do it against a team that's not the best run defensive team in the league. That would be comforting for Bills fans. I think it'll be just as comforting if they find a way to win just that we don't understand, that we haven't thought of.
Yeah, possible.
Getting a win is the most important thing, and I don't care what it looks like. I'm sure Bills fans don't. I would like to see this offense win and not leave 12 points on the field.
Yeah,
you know, I'd like, or more. That would be nice too.
All right, we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll get to the tweet sheet to see what your thoughts are regarding the matchup you're most looking forward to watching on Sunday against the Dolphins. And you better believe those two running backs are going to be motivated to show out on Sunday, because both of them hail from South Florida. Who knows, they may have even gotten some of those few tickets available for their family members to come watch and play. So hopefully that adds a little extra juice to their tanks, respectively. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, back in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Second half of the program is underway here on One Bills Live, a Wednesday edition. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And it is time, Steve, as always, to move on to the tweet sheet. Brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. As we are asking you what matchup you're most looking forward to on Sunday against the Dolphins in Miami. And from Jeremy, he says, I enjoyed the passing success we had against a poor secondary. I'm curious to see if the run game can't take off like it did this past week. How they are going to get the ball moving is of interest to me. And I would expect them to gain some traction in the run game this week. I am expecting them to have more success than they had last week. It can't be much less effective than it was last week at 2.27 yards per carry between Moss and Singletary, respectively. And we know the Dolphins struggled last week mightily in terms of stopping the run. They're last in the league in run defense right now after one game played.
Well, they're going to give it – you would think they're going to come in and test it, no question. And every game's different as it unfolds. But it seems obvious that they can't feel good about their football team if they can't run the football against anybody. They couldn't do it against the Jets, and they're going to continue to go to it until they can figure something out. Their offensive line should be able to make some traction, should be able to play better than it did. Certainly it'll be better when Cody Ford and Darrell Williams on the right side get more reps together. And the coaching staff is going to dissect and pull apart what those guys do well and tailor the run plan to give those guys a chance to be successful. But there's no way – they can I don't say no way. They don't want to go through the game through the rest of the season without having a run game that at least gets some can help that passing game at some point. Josh Allen can't be their running game. That's not sustainable. We had this conversation yesterday, and it was our Twitter poll yesterday, and Sean McDermott was asked about it today. Where that balance is between.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the run and the pass for your quarterback. And he's one time too many is way too many. Because that's when you lose your quarterback for a month or for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So you can't go past that line and still feel good about it because you lose games that way.
From Nick, he says, I can't wait to watch Josh Allen's growth in the passing game this week against Miami's high-paid cornerbacks. I do believe this game will not be a walk in the park. You got to love Fitz, and Flores is good. They should be prepared. Can't wait. I think you can mark that down as a for sure. Like, you look at Flores and what he's trying to build down there, it's kind of like, as we said earlier, the Bills in 2018. The Bills in 2018... You know, the salary cap purge, cleaning up the cap, parting ways with a lot of talent, some of which they didn't feel was a fit here, and some of which they had to because they had to bite the bullet. I think the general consensus was, even though the team is probably not going to be a playoff team in 2018, the Bills were going to fight you tooth and nail for every inch on the field. And I think Brian Flores is building something similar in Miami. And you saw that in the game last week against New England. They're down 14-3, and they are coming at New England. I mean, everything, whether it's running backs hitting the hole, you know, as hard as they possibly can, whether it's linebackers coming up to fill against the run. I mean, they are bringing the wood every single play. They are playing hard for Brian Flores. So Bills get up on the Dolphins. You know, let's say it's 14-3, just like it was last week for Miami. They're not going away. They're going to keep fighting tooth and nail.
And they're not outmanned like they were a year ago. Last year they got a lot. They were, yep. You know, they were accused of tanking and all that. And Brian Flores had them playing too good for them to tank that season. And you can expect them to do that this year. And they've got more talent. And I think the shortened preseason, the fact that they've got a lot of new prominent players. Now the Bills added some new players, and certainly Steph Diggs is prominent, but that's one. You know, you look at the skill sets and the defense and all. Most of these guys have some experience in this. They're veteran players. The Dolphins have a lot of new parts, and it's going to take them a while to get it together. A couple of rookies on the offensive line, like you mentioned, and the rest of it. So I think they're going to play better as the weeks go by, Miami, because they're one of the teams, despite the fact they've got the same coach. I think this is one of those teams that's going to benefit from or that got crushed by not having a preseason. That's going to benefit as the first month of the season gets under their belt. They're going to look way better than they did in week one.
From Ronnie on the tweet sheet, the Dolphins' corners are their strength. I think we're going to see more handoffs this week. Dable showed an ability to attack weaknesses, and the Bills have the weapons to attack whatever he wants, which is why I'm looking forward to the matchup between our O-line and their D-line. Now, that is an interesting matchup. You look at what the Dolphins have to throw at the Bills' offensive line. They've got a first-round draft choice in Shaq Lawson. They've got a first-round draft choice in Christian Wilkins. And then they've got Davin Godshaw, who was a mid-round pick. And who's the fourth guy on that line up there? I think it's number 91 on the D-line.
Yeah, Edmund Ogba.
Oh, Emmanuel Ogba.
Emmanuel Ogba.
Who I think was a late first-round pick as well. So you've got high draft choices there on the front that are going against this Bills offensive line. And while I think Buffalo's offensive line is certainly capable of resetting the line of scrimmage against this Dolphins front, let's see it first, because it didn't manifest itself last week. So they've got to answer the bell this week in the run game. I mean, plain and simple. And I know, Steve, you mentioned this during the break. The Feliciano factor is something that if they have trouble winning that battle at the line of scrimmage on a consistent basis, people are going to start wondering about how much this offensive line does miss John Feliciano.
Well, he gives them that edge, and his toughness is what they continued to talk about last year when he emerged as a starting guard for them. They just love what he brings to the table. He's a guy. He's a finisher. He goes to the echo of the whistle. Defenders don't like guys like that. They have a hard time playing against him.
He's an enforcer.
He is a tough customer, and it's always fun to have, because not everybody likes to go in looking for a fight in a football game, right? So when you're starting to get frustrated and things like that, you need somebody who likes to mix it up like that,
yeah.
Who likes to, you know, he'll grab the other guy's face mask and push him off, you know, after the whistle's on, and be the guy that steps in and separates them or has to be separated from that team. You need a guy who is that I'm not backing down kind of guy. Because other guys will be able to jump on with him, and it gives your whole team a little grit. You need that.
Yeah, we saw some of that from Cody Ford last year as a rookie. I still remember the preseason game in Detroit where I want to say it's Mike Daniels, veteran defensive lineman in this league, a guy that's known for mixing it up with people and talking crap. He went after Cody Ford because he thought Cody played too far after the whistle with him, and he went after him, and Cody went right back at him, which was good to see, because you don't want a rookie, you know, I know he hasn't earned his stripes in this league, but you don't back down to anybody.
Right.
Otherwise, they're going to kick you to the curb in terms of respect and all of that stuff. So it was good to see him go after him and know that he's got some fire in the belly. We may need to see more of that this week.
Right.
Someone's going to have to charge that group up to get them going in the run game, and I think they'll have more success than they did last week. The degree of success is something that I'm anxious to see here.
It's hard to imagine them having less.
I know.
It was inconsistent. It was non-existent.
Yeah.
You had two, both.
The longest
running
backs run by them was what, 8 yards?
I think we had one
nine?
For 12. And that, I think,
hold on,
the rest of it, it was, they had two runs, each running back, both Moss and Singletary, had one long run, and I'm going to tell you what it is right now, the statistics of that game. Here we go. Singletary and Moss, they each had nine. Singletary's long run was 12. Moss's long run was 7. So you take the 12 off. Singletary had 8 rushes for 28 yards. Moss had
He didn't have 8 rushes for 28 yards. He had 8 rushes for 18 yards.
That's right, 18, not 28. 8 in public math. So he had 8 rushes for 18, did Singletary, if you take his long run off, and Moss had 8
for 4.
For 4. That's non-existent run game.
Yeah. It's got to be better this week. I don't think there's any question about that. Let's go back to the tweet sheet, and Tiffany says, in my opinion, this will be a close game, and our special teams unit will determine the outcome. Andre Roberts was exceptional in the return game, setting up the offense with solid field position. Tyler Bass has to execute his field goal attempts. I think this game comes down to a clutch field goal. She is expecting a nail-biter, Steve, and she picked other on the Twitter poll because she's going special teams.
Yeah, she's right. I think Andre Roberts was a big factor in this Bills-Jets game. He was a field position
changer. He had a better run game than the Zach Wilson, Devin Singletary.
And Bass, there's no question Bass is going to come in with a little chip on his shoulder with something to prove. I don't know whether that's a helpful thing or a hurtful thing for a kicker. It's different for each one of them. But no question about it, if it comes down to a clutch field goal and Bass is the one who actually kicks it and makes it, particularly if it's like 55-yarder, that goes miles towards his confidence level in the team and the fan base having a little bit more faith in him.
From Nick T on the tweet sheet, got to go with our pass game against their secondary. Against the Jets, we were about as good as we could have hoped for after all our offseason moves. But I want to see if it was due more to our ability or the Jets' bad secondary. The Dolphins should help show our true colors. Boy, he is dead on with that because you're gonna. This is a better measuring stick this week against this secondary than last week was. Last week didn't tell you anything other than the Bills are capable of playing pitch and catch. This week will tell you whether your receivers are good enough to win on a consistent basis against quality defensive backs.
Yeah, that's it'll be interesting to see. And it'll be interesting to see, given the fact that they're going to – the Dolphins will both play man and zone, and how Josh adjusts to that. Because the Dolphins can't – they're not going to play man coverage, just press man coverage for 80 snaps this game. And you've got to be able to see the difference and know the difference between the two. And I would like to see Josh be a little bit more efficient. I would like – you know, first of all, don't fumble the ball twice, but also be able to hit those passes that – everybody outside of Bills fans, Vandam, was pointing at and saying, hey, your guy hasn't changed. I want to see him just hit those. There's going to be times when the Dolphins drop coverage and Josh is going to have a chance to hit a wide-open guy. Take your time and hit that guy. I want him to stay on the field again. I want him to have those 14-play drives. That drive they had, that those first couple of drives they had weren't even close. The Jets could not get them off the field. They were in total control.
It looked like
control.
They were playing eight guys on defense.
Total control. That's what I want to see again. I don't care if they're throwing it every down or running it every down. Just stay on the field and dominate the game with time of possession and finish your drives with points.
Time to take a break, but when we return, Steve and I will discuss an interesting statistic from week one. And it is not about the mobile quarterbacks that Steve broke off on us yesterday with all of them going 5-0. It has to do with the officials and the number of penalties called, the specific penalty being holding. We will break that down for you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. As we are set to close out hour number two of the show, coming up at two is one Armando Salguero. That's how I would do it if he was like a professional athlete and I was the PA announcer. I would be doing that every single time.
Every time.
Dolphins reporter from the Miami Herald will be joining us at the top of the hour. We do want to remind you, Bills fans, that Thurman Thomas and Pepsi have teamed up this Bills season to surprise a few lucky fans with an unbelievable home tailgate experience. All I can tell you is you need to head to madeforbillswatching.com for your chance to score a tailgate visit from number 34, the Therminator. So get on the website, check it out, enter for a chance to win. Our MSG viewers see that he's got a food truck. Billy Buffalo is riding shotgun with him. Should be interesting to see what he will have in store for the winner of a home tailgate experience.
Yeah.
And suffice to say that
nice truck.
Thurman isn't shy about yelling at the television if there's something he doesn't like seeing during a game.
He's never been shy. Never been shy.
Steve, I wanted to run this past you. One of the developments from week one, okay, there were several, obviously, with the Bills and across the league.
This is interesting.
A lot of injuries, as we've talked about already on today's show. One thing there weren't a lot of were holding penalties. Steve, do we remember the time last year around this time where holding was a point of emphasis for NFL officials? And my God, did we see a lot of them. How much, you ask?
How much?
Last year in week one, there were 82 holding penalties called league-wide. Last week, a total league-wide 18.
It's like one per game.
That is a precipitous drop-off.
A precipitous.
From 82 a year ago.
Obviously.
And the general consensus is that after the long layoff, officials, although the league won't admit this, were basically encouraged to not call as many holding penalties unless it was egregious, to maintain the flow of the game. And I will have to say this, Steve. Last week's game between the Bills and the Jets just seemed to move along
at
a nice pace because the flags weren't gobbing up the works.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. And I'm not surprised that the point of emphasis for the 2020 season is
don't call
stay
it.
Stay out of the way. I get that. And I was worried. I was kind of worried about how it was going to go with the officiating. How, not just how many they would call and what would look, but also whether they would be up to it. And I think they were. I thought they did a good job. Now, certainly, you can look back at every game, and it happens every week, and absolutely every game without exception, that there's a call where you go, nah, I should have called that, all of that. But there was no call in the game. So you can go back and look at the Jacksonville. No, that wasn't the Jacksonville. It was the Rams-Dallas game at the end where the Cowboy receiver extended. And I thought it live action, I saw Ramsey kind of get pushed, and I thought, yeah, I thought it was right. That was a good call, live action.
Though.
Of course he did.
Cornerback embellishment.
But if you see that thing in live action.
Hey.
I don't know.
I mean, it looks like an easy job on TV. If you're on the sideline watching the speed at which these players play, and you have to make a call like that, it is not as easy as it looks. They do not have an easy job. I will say this. The penalty total for holding, 18 penalties, for holding across the league in week one, it is the second fewest total penalties
called
in 20 years in a given week.
Well, there you go. In any given week.
Yeah.
Not just week one. Any given week. Wow.
How about them apples?
That tells me something.
It tells me that it's probably not going to be the same next week.
That tells me the Bills Dolphins is going to be three-hour and 45-minute.
Because you know
game.
Who's not happy with that? Every defensive lineman in the NFL.
Right. They'll get some calls.
What the hell is going on out here? Are you going to throw a flag or not?
But here's the thing. It's for every team. So unless your team gets five holding penalties and the other team gets zero, you don't care because you got an offense and a defensive line too, so whichever one's you got to make your guys aware that that's how it's going to be played. The problem comes with this: some teams will be very adept at exploiting that. Listen, they're not calling holding.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let your guy go. Get him. You know, use it. Make them call it, and find out how far you're going to be able to push it. Your teams are going to start to try and turn it to their advantage. And when that happens, then I think all of us have a problem with it.
We have to step aside, but when we return, it will be one Armando Salguero joining us, Dolphins reporter for the Miami Herald. He'll be on with us after the break to break it down for us and see what he thinks about some of the more intriguing matchups in this Week 2 tilt between these division rivals. That's all coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.